Well, it's the February 11th Campus Connection Show. School district officials are here in the KFSK studio with me to talk about what's going to be happening at the school board meeting tonight. We have Superintendent Erica Kluepainter joining us and Board President Mara Lutomski.
Hi, Angela.
Hi.
Hi, Angela.
So tonight's a regular meeting of the board, and that means it starts at 6 p.m. It's going to be in the middle and high school library as usual. Mm-hmm. And on the agenda, there's... I guess we could start off by talking about the Alaska Reads Act, and it's a Senate bill of sorts, right? A Senate bill that's in Juneau now. Lawmakers are considering it, and it's about really little kids reading, right? And improving their scores across the state. Mm-hmm. That's pretty general, so.
That's the high-level view.
Yeah, what can you share with us about this act, and how far in the process are we?
Well, it dropped on... January 21st, so we're just a few weeks into trying to look at it and digest it and understand it and figure out questions and comments that we have about it. And Mara and I just came back from a legislative fly-in this weekend in Juneau with the School Boards Association and had some opportunities to talk to a lot of other districts and also to hear from some of the legislators that are wrestling with this as well and looking at it, and the Commissioner of Education as well talked to us about it. How far in do we want to go?
Well, it was, it's a bipartisan effort, or mm-hmm. it's being tagged as a bipartisan effort from Senator Tom Begich, who is out mm-hmm. of Anchorage and is a Democrat, mm-hmm. and then Governor Dunleavy. So they have said that they have worked together to create this bill. And there were a few differences that they're kind of ironing out right now between how their two bills looked. But they weren't supposed to be great major changes. So I see the bill in kind of two different big chunks. Mm-hmm. There is an effort to increase reading scores, reading proficiency,
By third grade.
That's kind of the deadline that mm-hmm. the lawmakers are seeing. And how you would implement that within your school. So that's a big part of the bill. And then a second part of the bill, which they are tying to reading fluency and success, is pre-K. And kids going through pre-K. So the second part of this bill would, in essence, as it's written now, require all school districts across the state to offer pre-K by the end of 6 years. So mm-hmm. your school will have, your district will have to create some form of pre-K offering to kids, and it'll be implemented over 6 years. So the schools that have the lowest reading fluency by third grade right now would be the first to be implemented, and then they would move to another section and another section, another section, until they have reached all school districts implementing a pre-K offering mm-hmm. within their district.
I just, on the surface, it seems like that would cost money with an administration that doesn't want to, that has, in, at least this last year, didn't want to spend money on education.
It's a big part of the conversation this weekend. They are, there is a cost to this. The one component of the bill that's come out so far that does have funding attached to it is the pre-K component, as well as, so for that part, as Mara said, it's kind of two parts to this. So they're looking at potentially phasing in once you have a certified program in your school with a certified teacher. That's another requirement. Then they will provide up to 0.5 of the BSA for a student, so it would factor into the base student allocation, and that's the first time I will say that they've ever talked about it actually attaching money to early childhood education in the state. So the cost to it could be upwards of they're saying $90 to $100 million over 6 years. So there's that part for a cost, and then there's also they're looking at hiring potentially up to 40 reading specialists through the Department of Education. They have not ironed out all the details of what that might look like, or how those specialists would be sort of deployed, I guess, around the state, what that might look like in individual districts. I don't know if, I mean, you look at a district the size of Anchorage and how many elementary schools they have, upwards of, what, 60 plus elementary schools, and then, you know, a district our size with one each, all the way down to schools that have, you know, 50, or districts that have 50 kids. So I'm not really sure how they'll, what they're planning to do exactly with those 40 specialists, and I don't think they really have all of that ironed out either. So that's a little concerning. You know, I mean, there's pieces of it, but as Mara said, those are some of the details they're wanting to work through in the next. Mm-hmm.
So the funding right now is only attached, like the numbers that they're coming up with, mm-hmm. and they're thinking about this is going to be an overall spend of, is only looking at the pre-K. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's not looking at the implementation of the reading part of it through the kindergarten through third grade, mm-hmm. The assessments that have to be done, the extra paperwork and reporting that would need to be done to the state, mm-hmm. the hiring of the certified reading specialists that would have to be done. So right now, that portion doesn't have money attached to it.
It's
so
just
the biggest
an idea
concern
right now, mm-hmm. like an idea being presented.
It's in the legislation as they've presented it. So they just don't really have all of the specific details of it worked out. And so that was a lot of the conversation this weekend at the fly-in amongst districts, and then amongst some of the people that spoke to us from the department, and as well as through the legislature. So a lot of questions.
Yeah, including what about communities that already have preschools mm-hmm. in them, mm-hmm. and then if schools are required to have their own preschool, how does that work?
Right.
Or how would that work?
And those are some things that we were immediately concerned with, because here in Petersburg, we do have several offerings already locally in our community. So we wanted to reach out. In fact, we're meeting with some of our preschool educators right now. Across the street. So, because we didn't want to be having conversations about this on the radio and that sort of thing without first having conversations with our local preschool educators. And this, and as we say, this, I mean, the time frame on this is moving very quickly. I mean, you know, like we say, it was dropped January 21st, it's mm-hmm. February 11th. And there's been a lot of.
And I will say, and I don't know 100%, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whether the department did reach out prior to the bill dropping, but I don't think that there was stakeholder input prior to releasing the bill
right.
in the first place. So, you know, they didn't speak to districts about right. what it might look like if we offer this bill.
Mm-hmm.
They offered the bill, and now they're going to get all of the feedback. So,
mm-hmm.
cart before horse, maybe.
Right.
Maybe they don't want to hear the wide variety of concerns that they will have, because districts look different all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been told by a couple of different sections that they do expect that this will make it to the governor's desk in some form.
I was going to say, mm-hmm. could it be maybe kind of split into parts? You're talking about the kind of K through three mm-hmm. reading portion, and then there's the preschool portion.
Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing about this is, you know, as educators, I don't think any of us, of course, are going to argue with the fact that early childhood education should be recognized. I'm very happy about that conversation finally moving to that level. So that's been a huge push, you know, to try to make sure that all children have access to good early childhood education. But as Mara said, that looks very different, you know. So even in Petersburg, there are actually several good options, you know, here already. So that was some of our concern, just talking through that with, you know, with our local providers who are currently in our community, and what that might look like, because it actually could look like, you know, it's could be a competitive component for people who already currently have private preschool running in the community. So we want to have those conversations with our preschool educators on the front end. We want to work together to see what this potentially could look like, and how we might be able to work together to craft something that works best for Petersburg. We do already work with our preschools currently, because we provide special education services through the district down to age three. So we're used to, you know, we have good working relationships with our preschools and our daycares already. So we just want to all kind of pool our resources and talk through these things together. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., there is also opportunity for people who are out there who are interested in providing some feedback or testimony about the READS Act. It's open to public. That's not just school people. That can be anybody. It's
open testimony.
9 o'clock tomorrow morning on Wednesday. So that could be important. The bill itself is available for anybody to look at. We're going to be going through it a little bit more detail tonight with the whole board, just to kind of talk through. It's a pretty long bill, so.
Yeah, I look like 16 pages, and
yeah.
I was having trouble.
20.
So, okay.
And the original one that dropped, I just looked this up. The original one that dropped was 8 pages.
Yes.
And then now they have come up with the committee substitute that expanded it to 20 pages.
Okay.
Yes.
It's kind of hard reading for me a little bit.
Yes.
You know,
there's a lot
trying
in
to
there.
Figure out what's in there.
Yeah, there's a lot in there.
And as of today, we just received forthcoming changes in the Senate bill, and there's 34 changes that they're just changing today before it goes before public testimony
tomorrow.
So it's an evolving bill.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, overall good idea. Everybody wants kids to read.
Sure.
But all the details, you probably don't have any figures on what it would look like for Petersburg in terms of paying for a preschool or a teacher, at least one.
Right, exactly. And I think, and that's the thing too, because as Mara mentioned, the way that they're kind of rolling this out across the state so that they're not taking the whole cost in the first year, is rolling it out for kind of the highest need areas first. But the other part of that is if there are school districts who do have a preschool within their school currently with a certified teacher and with, you know, following all of the department guidelines that they have laid out, you can apply for funding if you already have one in existence. So that's the other caveat to that. So again, that's some of the conversations we want to have with our local preschools now about what those possibilities might look like, and including special services and the best way that we can provide all of those services to kids.
Seems like such a change from last year. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was concern about pre-K education in the state by some people with how the budget was presented.
I think that without being too political about it, but I do think that this is sort of an outcome of, you know, the governor feeling some pressure potentially with the recall effort, and knowing that there are some things. I mean, I think trying to reach across the aisle, or whatever you want to call that, I mean, trying to have something that people can sort of agree on, which people should be able to agree on. It's important to educate our children and get them off to the best start that we can. I just don't know that all of those pieces have been looked at closely enough within, you know, the impacts to individual districts yet. So we're kind of doing it as it's rolling out, which is a little, you know, it's pretty fast moving.
Yeah.
I will say a lot of the things, and Mara mentioned this before we got on, but most, I would say 90% of the things that they're talking about with the K-3 interventions and instruction and doing universal screenings and all those kinds of things, those are things that are already currently in place here in Petersburg. So there's not a whole bunch there that's hugely new, but there's some interesting conversation in there about retention and what that might look like, and some
retention as in
retaining students,
holding kids back. I mean, that's how the general public would know it as.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Depending on their reading scores,
based on yes. So those are there's some pretty big concerns there too, because there's a lot of research out there about academic gains based on retaining students versus other reasons that you might retain maybe a younger student for social emotional reasons, or, you know, there's a lot of research out there. So most of the educators that I've spoken with are pretty concerned about that, and they do keep saying it's not a mandatory, it's not an automatic, you know, that sort of thing, but it must be offered as one intervention within the bill as it's written now. So there's a lot of conversation to be had about that and a lot of research around it. So
wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's our biggest, I think, concern, because the way that the bill is written, or so it seems, is that if they're not passing their screening, whatever screening, and we don't even know what that looks like, what the state is going to expect a screening to look like. Is it going to just be a standardized test? Is it going to be a verbal test between teacher and child? Is it a worksheet? Is it, you know, they don't have those things prescribed out quite yet on what the state would classify a child at being at reading proficient. And the way we feel like the bill is written basically says you will retain unless you have an exemption. And so the process is more like, not that it's an option, but it is a standard, and you have to exempt your student out of it. You have to prove why they shouldn't be retained. And that's just kind of a... It doesn't sit well with how the bill is being rolled out to be helpful to schools. It's not... It wouldn't be the first, I don't think, in research terms, it would not be what would be suggested.
Yeah, that's not
in
the first.
Case as a first.
Exactly. That should not option. Be the first option, the first intervention. And it also does not address trauma-informed instruction. It doesn't address social-emotional issues. It doesn't address all of the other factors that have an impact on why a child might not be reading at grade level. According to a test, it does not take all of those pieces into account, and that's hugely concerning to me and to others, I think, around the state, that it's not the whole picture. There's lots of things that go into helping a child be successful in school and learning to read, and those factors are not really, you know, addressed in here, why a child might not be ready, based on a lot of other things that could be outside of school that we... you know, need to address in order to help them get ready for that, but it might take a while to get there. So it doesn't factor those things in. So that's a concern.
And kids really progress just at their own pace, even when things are all in place. I'll use myself as an example. My child as an example is that in going into first grade, in the first part of the year, he was being evaluated as being below proficient in reading, and they were considering putting him into the Title I program, which is the after-school reading fluency help. And we were fine. I mean, I was fine with that. Okay, if he's not reading, then that's fine. But when he didn't end up going there, when we got back from Christmas break and they did another testing, he had jumped like four steps. So kids just progress at their own kind of pace, no matter what the interventions go on, or, you know, sometimes despite what's going on at home, and sometimes and good and bad ways. You know, they could have good things going on at home and still not be reading, and they could have bad things going on at home and be a great reader.
Yeah.
So, it's hard to put one prescription on for all kids and in all areas of Alaska.
Yeah, I think that's true, too.
Yeah. Well, we will listen to what happens tonight at the board meeting as you talk more about the Alaska Reads Act and anything else we need to touch on about the meeting. There's a couple policies, looks like. Well, at least there's one new policy, and it's an optional policy about pandemics and epidemics, but it looks like the state is saying this might be a good one to look at and to adopt, and the policy committee already looked at it.
Yep. Yeah. So it was rolled out through our school board association. That if you don't have a pandemic policy on your books, then perhaps you should. They've reviewed this one, and then our own local policy group reviewed it as well. So they've recommended it to move forward and pass. And I mean, I think it's a little bit in light of the coronavirus that's affecting us right now. So
just having a plan in place.
It's always good to have a plan in place before any kind of disaster
strikes. And I will say, I always want to do a shout out to our local public health department and our clinic with the infectious disease and all that with Liz Bacom. They're super proactive. They always reach out whenever there's anything happening, like in the state or across the nation or whatever, especially with something like this. Just sending information, just reminders, sometimes just information like, don't panic. I mean, you know, you might want to send this out and share this with families. And, you know, so we're really fortunate that way. We have a good quick relationship that we can reach out to them and they get us information, or they'll vice versa, they'll check in. That's what was happening even a few weeks ago here with kind of the numbers of kids that were having different colds and then flus and strep and that sort of thing. They always check in and, you know, how many kids are we talking about? What does it look like? Remind people to stay home if they have a fever, you know, all those kinds of things. So we have a good relationship with our local healthcare providers.
Also, there, it looks like you're going to be, Erica, you'll be presenting a proposed calendar for next school year. When I glanced at it, I didn't see much change from the last few years.
Nope.
Kind of following the same idea.
Not too much different looking into this coming year. There was a couple things we did this year with, we're trying some different things with some conferences. We're experimenting a bit, especially middle and high school. It's challenging to try to get everybody in to see, you know, if you have multiple teachers. So the elementary is very easy. You schedule them and people come and it works out. But middle and high school is challenging. And then especially just as kids get older, sometimes parents have different ideas about that and maybe you want to have a different sort of conversation. So we're doing something different here in the next few week or so, actually. Middle school will be doing sort of evening conferences like they kind of have traditionally done on Monday and Tuesday. So Monday we have an in-service day and then they'll do evening conferences, I think 4 to 7. And then Tuesday, and that's just middle school, then on Tuesday we're going to have the same sort of, you know, late afternoon, early evening conferences for scheduled for middle and high school. And then in the spring, in April, later in April, the high school is going to actually do kind of an open opportunity for people to drop in and talk with teachers about how their kids are doing, as well as doing kind of a show off in the high school, mm-hmm. like having people, you know, come through the shop and see what's going on in the shop, come through the art class and see what's happening there, come in and we're going to set up, maybe we'll do have some coding activities set up in Mr. Thompson's room, or, you know, check out what a lesson might look like in the Vietnam class that Mr. Engel teaches, or, you know, that sort of thing, just to kind of give a little flavor and try something a little different. Maybe have some financial literacy information available, talking with parents about planning for their kids' college or their vocational training or the next step. So trying to, life is different now. We communicate with parents in different ways. The kind of the old school conferences are don't necessarily work anymore. You know, parents look at PowerSchool grades and you can communicate on emails and texts and remind, and, you know, it's a different world. So I think we want to try some different things. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're looking at there. So some of those things weigh into calendars too, you know, talking about semester dates and in-service days and all of that. So anyway, just put a little shout out there about that too.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. And again, the school board meeting will be tonight. It starts at 6 p.m. in the high school, middle school library. And as usual, KFSK will be broadcasting the meeting live.
Perfect.
We'll see you there tonight.
Great.
Thanks, Erica and Mara.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Ross is here to be our host for Street Beat this afternoon. That'll be coming up.